It's been over a decade since the Al-Qaeda suicide bombers blew up the naval missile destroyer, the USS Cole, while it was docked in the Yemeni port of Aden. It killed 17 crew members. But although the attack's alleged mastermind, senior Al-Qaeda Lieutenant Abd al-Nashiri, was captured by American operatives in 2002, the case against him is still only in pretrial hearings and predicted to begin sometime next year. The case will bring capital charges against al-Nashiri and, according to Lawrence Douglas, will test the legitimacy of both the military commission and of the American justice system itself. Mr. Douglas is the James J. Grusfield Professor of Law, Jurisprudence, and Social Thought at Amherst College, and his article in the October edition of Harper's is called A Kangaroo in Obama's Court. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
You argue that no matter how closely the U.S. government follows the laws of due process, the manner in which al-Nashiri has been treated up until this point already taints the proceedings?
Yeah, I mean, right now the government is kind of laboring against a very difficult backstory, and I guess there are two separate backstories that the government is laboring against. One is what happened to al-Nashiri before he was actually transferred to Guantanamo to stand trial. He wasn't. He was actually captured, as you mentioned. He was captured actually in October of 2002, but he wasn't transferred to Gitmo until September of 2006. That's almost 4 years later. And during that four-year period, he was in the custody of the CIA, and we have a pretty good record of what happened while he was in CIA custody. Namely, he was tortured. That is, he wasn't simply subjected to cruel and inhumane interrogation practices. He was tortured kind of plain and simple. So that's one problem. And the other problem, of course, that the government is laboring against is the kind of the backstory of these military commissions themselves. Bush had announced very soon after 9/11 in November of 2001 that he planned to try certain persons with by military commission, but the Bush-era military commissions really did not look like recognizable institutions of American justice. And so even though they've been very significantly reformed since then, the question is whether they can kind of liberate themselves from the association with that Bush-era taint.
Well, as it stands now, statements acquired through torture or inhumane interrogation aren't allowed to be used as evidence during court proceedings. Will they be allowed in this case?
No, they will not be. So, I mean, again, these are some of the differences between the military commission as presently constituted and the military commission as originally kind of contemplated by Bush. So Bush originally imagined that, yeah, you could use all sorts of statements and pieces of evidence that would ordinarily be barred in a typical American civilian court. The military commission, as it's evolved over time, as it's kind of looked as it's become more of a recognizable institution of American justice, has now incorporated a lot of those norms that we associate with kind of basic due process. And so the military commission, as it's presently constituted, will not permit that type of evidence in court.
That's because the Supreme Court decided in 2006, the year that al-Nashiri was brought to Gitmo, that the Bush military commissions were not legal?
Yeah, exactly. In 2006, in this important case of the Hamdan v. Rumsfeld case, the Supreme Court struck down Bush's model for the military commission, saying it was in violation of both the Uniform Code of Military Justice and the Geneva Conventions. And after that, there was a congressional attempt to reform those commissions. Then there was in 2006, and then there was another effort to reform it yet again in 2009. And there was kind of this constant tampering, or not so much tampering, but a constant effort to improve the process. And that's really what's being tried right now in Guantanamo.
Well, most of the attention under the new act was paid to the trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, which was originally set to take place here in New York. Was it ever proposed that al-Nashiri's case should take place in a federal civilian court?
Well, that's actually it's a very good question. It's one of the reasons that I'm writing about Nashiri's case and not writing about the case against the 9/11 defendants, the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his four confederates, which is another case which is wending its way through the pretrial motions at Guantanamo. Those are the only two cases presently before the Military Commission, and they're the only two that deal with capital charges.
And you say that they are the most important trials since Nuremberg.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, they're the most important trials before a Military Commission since Nuremberg. Now, to some degree, that's a little bit of a, it sounds very dramatic, that statement, but we really haven't had American Military Commission since Nuremberg. So, the military trial by military commission is both kind of an important institution in American legal history, but it's also been a quite anomalous one. And just getting back to the question you asked before, Nasri, it was never contemplated that he would be brought before civilian court. As you point out, in the case of KSM, there was a thought about bringing him to trial in a federal court in Manhattan. Of course, that was quickly... the administration quickly backpedaled from that idea.
Because of the huge outcry from not only people in Congress, but also people who lived in Manhattan.
Exactly. And even Mayor Bloomberg expressed concern about the security nightmare that bringing Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to a Manhattan or federal court would present. But in the case of Nasri, because his target was the USS Cole, it was a military target, and so his case really provides us with kind of the almost the best referendum on the military commission, because it really is a case that arises under the law of armed conflict.
You note that the expeditionary legal complex at Guantanamo looks nothing like the military tribunal court in Nuremberg. In Nuremberg, the proceedings were filmed, but you were only allowed to take photos in a designated 3-by-3-foot square?
Yeah, it's there's a real tension with what's going on there, because on one level, I truly believe that the prosecution and the commission itself wants to get the word out that this procedure has now liberated itself from the bad associations with from the Bush era, that it really is this legitimate institution. But it's very hard to see, just, I mean, there's the old line about justice needs to seem to be done in order to be done, and it's hard to see this thing if it is at Gitmo and if there are restrictions placed on media access. Now, again, these restrictions are understandable in certain respects because of national security, which is one of the reasons why the trial is taking place in Cuba, in Guantanamo Bay, and
Timothy McVeigh's trial took place in a federal court, and the trial of the blind Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, and nothing happened.
That's right. I mean, I don't want to say that it's impossible to do this kind of thing, but I guess, one should be a little bit deferential to the government in making these kind of national security calculations. As we all know, we shouldn't be overly deferential. We want to question the government's judgments. But on the other hand, we don't want to necessarily say that, just off the top, that those are illegitimate concerns.
My guest is Lawrence Douglas, the James J. Grossfield Professor of Law, Jurisprudence, and Social Thought at Amherst College, and author of an article called A Kangaroo in Obama's Court. It's in the October edition of Harper's Magazine. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. What is Nasri's background? Isn't it speculated that he was the head of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula?
Yeah, that's right. He's 48 years old. He is a Saudi. Originally, the family is from Yemen. He became a senior al-Qaeda lieutenant, and he is, of course, considered the mastermind of this attack on the USS Cole. It's interesting to compare him to the 9/11 defendants, who are quite devout, who are often also quite disruptive in their appearances before the military commission at Gitmo. Nasri is actually, by all accounts, not particularly devout. He's clean-shaven, he wears civilian clothing, and he's quite compliant in court. He's quite cooperative with the judge, with his attorneys, and seems to follow the proceedings very attentively.
He also hasn't participated in the hunger strike at Gitmo.
That's right. Even though largely the hunger strike, not entirely, but it was largely being done by the detainees who haven't been charged with anything. I mean, we have to remember that the prison population or the detainee population at Guantanamo is now at 164. And of those 164, you know, the overwhelming majority have been charged with no crimes whatsoever. So, you know, at least Nasri can say, I've been charged with a crime, so there's no reason for me to protest them holding me there.
He hasn't entered a plea yet. But to what extent does the treatment of him in the Gitmo detention camps play a role in his defense's case?
I think it will play a very important role with when it comes to questions of the capital charges that are brought against him. I think it's very, when you really look at this case is about the government ultimately trying to execute someone whom we systematically tortured. And I at least would argue that regardless of how adequate and proper the procedures are that might be used to adjudicate his guilt, there's still just something fundamentally wrong about executing someone whom we systematically tortured. And I believe the defense is going to make that argument quite powerfully as well. Of course, they're going to try to argue his innocence as well. But I do think a lot of the argument will focus on the capital charges.
And what is the prosecution likely to argue?
Well, I think the prosecution is likely to argue, well, of course, they will try to demonstrate his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, which is something that they have to do in the military commission in that sense that they have the same evidentiary burden that they would have. And I think when it comes to the capital charges, I think, you know, they'll say that we're going to leave this up to a panel. A panel is the technical term for the a jury. Of a military jury. And so Nasri will be tried by a military jury. And I think the prosecution's argument is the military jury is, in a sense, a representative of the American people, and let them ultimately make the determination as to whether he should live or die.
Well, considering the way he's been treated until now, it seems a bit odd that the government feels it's so important to give the impression that he's receiving a fair trial. You write that if the commissions are to succeed in legitimizing themselves, they will have to sever their connections to the detention camps in which the Gitmo prisoners are held.
Yes. And by that I mean, I'm not saying that a military commission will succeed in legitimating itself. What I do try to point out in the article is that those observers, and I do think there are, you know, a substantial number of observers who continue to associate the military commissions with the kind of discredited form that was adopted by Bush. And, you know, at least from what I've seen, there are really very substantial improvements, you know, improvements that are substantial enough such that we can say that the military commission starts to look like, doesn't necessarily equal, but starts to look a lot like the procedures we would have in a federal courtroom. That said, we continue to associate the military commission with Gitmo. So if, for example, you lifted the whole military commission up, which in principle is something you could do, and put it on some military base, and I'm just making this up, in Omaha, Nebraska, it at least would be formally separated from that inevitable association with Guantanamo Bay, and perhaps that would be an important step towards legitimizing its practice.
You're right that some of the things the governor said sound rather petty. Spiral notebooks are banned in the prison because the metal wire could be used as a weapon. But the more likely reason is that Nasri's lawyer likes to write in spiral notebooks.
Yeah, and I think, again, this is one of these things where my guess is the determination that they can't use spiral notebooks is a determination that is made by the camp commander, this guy named John Bogdan. My belief is that when Bogdan made the ruling, and it was actually a change of practice that had already been established in the past, defense lawyers were allowed to use spiral notebooks, and when Bogdan made that change, I really believe the prosecution and the commission was not tickled pink with that at all. I believe that they really don't care if the defense uses spiral notebooks or not, but suddenly they're thrust in this difficult position of having, after all, the commission and the prosecution, members of the defense of the military, they're thrust in the position of having to defend the decision of this perhaps overly cautious or eager to aggravate commander of the camp. And so it kind of puts them in a tricky position.
Why has so much more attention been paid to the KSM trial than this one?
Well, I think inevitably, it's simply the fact that it's the most spectacular crime in American history.
The Cole was pretty spectacular.
Yeah, no, it is pretty spectacular. But if you compare, you know, I hate to do it in these, you know, kind of the, it's not as if I'm trying to compare levels of atrocity, but you have 17 service members killed in the Cole bombing compared to 3,000 at 9/11. It's not only that, but I think it's also just in terms of our national psyche. I do think that 9/11 was just simply more of a traumatic event to our national psyche than the Cole bombing, which, not to say that the Cole bombing wasn't a horrific event. I mean, clearly I think it was.
And some might ask whether the actions of a terrorist like Nashri even require fair treatment or the right to a fair trial. Is it possible that he will receive a fair trial?
Again, I think the answer to that is, I think it's open. I guess my point is that everything I've seen so far suggests that the government is really working very, very hard to give him a fair trial. But this goes back to this point that I suppose I was trying to make earlier, which is there are questions of procedure and substance. Do the procedures now look fair? At least in these pretrial motions, I would argue they do look fair, and they do look quite promising to suggest that when it comes time to trial, he will receive a procedurally regular trial. But then there's the substance of what the government is ultimately trying to do, namely trying to execute or seeking to condemn and then have executed a man whom we systematically tortured. And I do think there's just something substantively wrong with that outcome.
Lawrence Douglas is the James J. Grossfield Professor of Law, Jurisprudence, and Social Thought at Amherst College. His article, A Kangaroo in Obama's Court, is in the October 2013 edition of Harper's. And that kangaroo is a stuffed animal the lawyer owns. I wanted to slip that in. Thank you so much for being with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.